Toledo, we're famous for Glass, Art Tatum, Tony Pacos, Jamie Farr, a world-class museum, the Toledo Mud Hens and Walleye, an outstanding zoo and public library system. But who are the people that make our city so great? Welcome to the Soul of the Glass City podcast. I'm your host, Monique. I'm so happy to be here with my guest today, the amazing Sandra Irvine. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
I know you're not a Toledo native, so I do want to know, starting off, what brought you to our wonderful city?
Well, I'm not a Toledo native, but I got here as fast as I could. Actually, we came for business purposes. My husband was born and raised here.
Okay. I didn't know that part.
Yes, and he came for business, a family business. We came after 27 years in Washington, D.C., and at first I thought, oh my gosh, it's so slow. And then I grew to love this city and all the people that make Toledo happen.
Yeah, I'm also not a Toledo native, and I've been here for 20, you know, now I think going on 21 years. So I understand, coming from New York, it felt super slow, and I was like, oh my God. But then I learned to appreciate and love that about Toledo.
Truly.
For those just learning about you, who are you and what do you do?
Well,
don't go into the whole thing.
What areas do you want to know?
just who you are at today.
Okay. I was born and raised in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I attended college, E.W. Scripps at Ohio University. I'm a professionally trained chef. I have business background as well. All sorts of fun things. And currently I am the executive director of the Inspiration Kitchen workforce development training program for individuals with moderate to severe barriers.
That is amazing. What inspired you to pursue a career in the food and beverage industry, and how did your journey begin?
The journey, I love when people refer to things as a journey because it really all is a journey. I think some people just come out of the womb hardwired for things, and it was inevitable that I wanted to be in the food and beverage. However, my father begged me not to become a chef or go into the hospitality industry because he had owned a restaurant for 16 years and went off into other areas. So,
what did he think was going to happen if you started your own restaurant or took over his?
It can be a hard industry. Most of the people that are long-term in the industry have tremendous passion because it's hard work, not just the physicality of it, but the entire picture. It's very hard work, hospitality industry. So I was with ad agencies for years. I came in, you know, in and out from writing, then matriculated closer and closer to the food industry. When we moved to Toledo, Ohio, I was doing it out in Washington, but here I looked around and said, what can I do here with that? Made an even deeper dive into the industry.
So what did he want you to be?
A lawyer.
I could see that.
Well, actually wanted me to be a physician, and I said that. You have to laugh and say, do you have any idea what the background is for that?
Well, you've had diverse experiences consulting for the United States Naval Academy and teaching enrichment courses at universities. How did these opportunities shape your career and allow you to engage with a broader audience?
All of the things that we do shape us. The things that I have done in the past in business, business at the Naval Academy, teaching. Right now I'm in the give back stage. So I've taken everything I've done over a long and very fortunate life, and I'm now giving back through this program. So I'm taking all the elements of everything that I learned from business, food and beverage, social work, all of that, and giving back and putting it together for the Inspiration Kitchen. And I think a lot of people do that, and I recommend a lot of people do that at the end of their regular career to take it and then do the give back.
During your time with Catholic Charities, you created and directed the Opportunity Kitchen program. What were some of the challenges and successes you encountered while working with individuals with moderate to severe barriers?
Someone from Catholic Charities called me and said, we're trying to put a program together. We want to call it the Opportunity Kitchen. We have a little bit of money, and we want it to be aimed at people with moderate to severe barriers coming out of former incarceration, trauma, mental abuse, physical abuse, drug abuse, and generational legacy of poverty. We want to teach them intensive culinary, get them employed, and then what we came up with was to follow them for 9 months to prevent recidivism. And I said, I don't know who would do that. And so I did some research to try to find someone, and then ended up researching everything I could about workforce development programs and other programs helping individuals that are marginalized in Toledo. And then I went regionally, and then I went nationally. Went to Edwin's in Cleveland, studied all of it, and decided, okay, this is what it should look like. Would you have me? Would you allow me to do the program? And they said yes.
And history was made.
Well, it took 4 months to write the curriculum, and it should have taken a lot longer. However, I recommend to anyone, if someone calls you and asks you to write curriculum, hang up immediately. It's very difficult.
Noted.
Well, if you want to do it right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I showed you all the curriculum the other day, and
oh yeah,
Monique looked at me and said, wow, that is really thick.
I was like, no, do not teach me the program in this time that I'm trying to learn about it.
Yeah, she did not want to learn about the five French mother sauces or the Maillard reaction for browning.
I did not get the cooking gene from my grandmother and my mother. You spearheaded the development of Cenere at the Sofia Quintero Art and Cultural Center. How did this program cater specifically to the Toledo Latino population, and what impact did it have?
When I joined the Sofia Quintero organization, they wanted me to help them with their $600,000 renovation. I spearheaded that for them, for a 6,000 square foot facility that they patiently over 17 years saved their pennies and did all of their events and made it their hub of meeting and museum across the street and boat building for children, all these wonderful things. So while I was there, they started bringing up about helping the Latino community, families, the children, to have healthier lifestyles, to build and have better lives. And so I said, I'm not sure how we're going to do that. And then I woke up in a Jerry Maguire moment, really,
seriously?
Like in the middle of the night. Okay. And I hand wrote 4 pages and I brought it in the next day. And the director read it and didn't say a word. And I thought, oh, I should be embarrassed now because this is probably ridiculous. And she looked up and said, this is exactly what we want to do. So we did it through the teaching kitchen and the gardens and health and collaborations through health and wellness in the community, through the children and the adults. It was a great program. Cenere is loosely, because people argue, it is loosely the Spanish word for to dine. And they asked me, what do you want to name what you wrote? And I said, I have no idea. You guys name it. I'll be good with anything that sounds reasonable. And again, cenare means to dine, but they took the spelling of the word is C-E-N-A-R-E, culinary education, nutrition, and responsible eating. And the person that named it was a physician, a psychiatrist. And I said, I couldn't have named that in my wildest, most creative
moment. It is pretty cool.
Yes. And so that had it was a kickoff to them. I then left to go and do Inspiration Kitchen, but they were well on their way. And the facility is beautiful.
I've been there.
Yes.
I
and
love
you
it.
Saw the kitchen. Did you like
the kitchen? Yes, the kitchens. And I heard people learn to cook there as well.
Oh, yeah. They do all sorts of things. They do all sorts of things.
And they feed the kids in the community.
Yeah, they feed the kids in the community. And yeah. It's great. They do good work over there.
Also, you have been involved with various organizations like the Ohio Innocence Project. Can you share more about how you've been contributing to the reintegration of returning citizens and the importance of second chances in rebuilding lives?
We take 10 to 12 students per 10-week program. Our program is 115 hours, 19 classes. We have usually 3 to 4 peoples with felony backgrounds in the program and others with what they call high misdemeanors. Those all prevent employment in a big way. So we have to really build our collaborations with the community, the judges, parole officers, and they really want to help. They really want people to become employed because here you have people that want a second chance, are willing to work hard over a 115-hour program, but then where do you place them? But we've been very successful with that. The hospitality industry is a great place for individuals coming out of that. Other barriers, include, you know, trauma, abuse. So we work with Ohioans for Disabilities. We work with the shelters, Lucas County Metropolitan Housing Authority, Financial Opportunity Center, TRIO. We'll walk them through from, I'll fill out the FAFSA and go all the way to the bitter end and follow them until the money comes to them, because most all of our students are on SNAP, if not all. The Jacques Pepin Foundation, famous chef Jacques Pepin, we were at public radio. I was just at Catalyst Kitchens with all of the foundation and 120 other people from 110 other organizations like myself. The foundation said when they went to Jacques, Jacques says, I want to give back. And they brought him various ideas. And the one idea that came up was, how about we take culinary, train people on the passion and incredible area of culinary, and help them reenter society? And he said, that's what I want to do. So if you look up the Jacques Pepin Foundation and look in there of helping those with barriers, it's amazing. We are now a Jacques Pepin Foundation grantee after three rejections, and they put me on a panel on how to handle rejection, and they were they're amazing. Amazing organization.
Congratulations. That's a big accomplishment.
To have that stamp on there.
Yes.
I was running down the hall, and the CEO at Lott Industries thought something was wrong, and I'm jumping up and down. So we are blessed with our alliances and many more. Those are just a few. But it has to be a collaborative effort. If the community and the business community are not involved, how can anyone re-enter? And I have to tell you, I am honored with the people that I work with, of their determination and hope, and they're just, it's amazing. It's amazing, but and many come from frames of reference where they don't understand. They just want to know, what's the secret? We actually teach executive training. We teach intensive culinary and intensive executive training, everything from getting them on LinkedIn to understanding. We scribe out what a corporate structure looks like, who reports to who. How can you be successful in business and not have recidivism when you don't even understand how business works?
Wow.
So we really do heavy hitting on that, a lot of repetition, and we have a beautiful graduation for them as well.
Well, I know that the building is beautiful. The kitchen was so clean. I was like, I have not seen a kitchen this clean, not even in a restaurant.
Spoiler alert, it hadn't been used in 5 years. And Tim Menke, who is an amazing individual, CEO of Lott, I went in and I thought, ugh, it was 30 days, 8 to 10 hours a day to clean it up. But it has to set an example, everything we do. And we have a farm in the back. You all must come and visit. Mm-hmm. We have a 2,100-foot hoop house, as well as acres of plantings, and we have a young man named Tyler Freeman who I brought in. It's amazing. And our individuals, many of which do not have the opportunity to go around greenery, they're in the city, and they go out there, and all of a sudden they light up. When we bring Farmer Tyler in to the classroom over and over, I didn't expect a lot of questions. They want to know everything. They want to know about the soil. What do you plant? How do you plant it? Why does it look different? It's just amazing. It's amazing how cathartic it is. And the one thing that I have to say is, when we do culinary education, we teach intensive transferable skills. They can really work anywhere. It applies to everything. It's just those that have more significant barriers, culinary will help them out.
As a passionate advocate for workforce development, what do you believe are the most effective ways to support marginalized populations that are facing employment barriers, and how do you integrate these strategies into your programs that you do? I think you kind of answered that already. But
I did, but I can answer it in three words. Training, training, training. The more training you have, the bigger your wings become. And we see it every day. A lot of individuals, they're dying to reinvent themselves. But we have a story that we tell in the classroom, and that is, has anyone here been to a bonfire or campfire? What prevents it from going out? They just stare at me. So what prevents it? Well, you have to put wood on it or fuel. Exactly. And so over 19 classes, 115 hours, what we're doing is throwing a lot of fuel on the fire, and then we want them to do that as they go on. We do a book of the day. We do 19 books. We do a book review, four-minute book review. And then we pass it around, and they have to take a picture of the front and the back. And I say, check it out of the library. Read two pages. Read the back and the front. We are trying to encourage training and additional training and additional training after the program, because with training will come growth. Otherwise, you're going to go in circles. How do we integrate it into the program? We bring in four guest speakers. Three of my guest speakers are wildly successful, incredibly charismatic people that came from nothing. And when I say nothing, I mean nothing. And they want to follow all three of them out into the parking lot. And I'm like, you have to stay here. Can't follow them out. And they explain to them what their road was, what their barriers are, and they just light up because they understand that person had the same barriers. How did you get there? One of them, I'm not going to say his name. He's a director-level CEO in town. He did not get he has a doctorate. He goes by doctor. He did not get his first degree, a bachelor's, until he was in his 40s. He had been in the military and had been in police forces in the South, where there was a lot of racial tension, and became beloved. Then they started encouraging him. They're like, we can take you further. So he got a bachelor's, two masters, and a doctorate. But I raise my hand and I make him repeat it to the class. I said, when did you get your first degree again? In my 40s. There's some hope there. That's strong hope.
My next question is, your work extends beyond the kitchen with initiatives like the Children's Tennis Program for At-Risk Youth that you had in Maryland. What motivated you to start this program, and how have you seen it positively impact your participants in the past?
Well, the tennis program started for urban youth, started on a bet. We were sitting around with a bunch of women and a friend of mine who had played tennis in college at a pretty well-known name, started talking about how it would be a great thing for urban youth. And all these people said, that would never work. Why would they want to play tennis? Urban youth. She got extremely irritated and started arguing. And then we started talking after that. And I said, all right, you want to start it? I'll start it with you. We had 450 kids a summer. Pushback from USTA, pushback from this city in Maryland that didn't want to give us the tennis courts. I had to get, you know, county councilmen involved. And it turned out to be great on a lot of levels, but 450 kids a summer. Yeah, for urban youth tennis program. Mm-hmm.
See what happens when you believe in the kids?
Yes.
And I also wanted to bring up, you had 400 episodes of your own radio show called The Fat Cat Cooking Show. We're not going to say which station, but how did you use the media to connect with food and beverage enthusiasts? And what was your approach to interviewing nationally known guests?
At the time, I was had a position with the Andersons, and someone came into some of my events who was with that giant radio place. And they came up and said, we'd like you to do a show. And I said, I am doing a million hours a week. I would love to. Thank you. I'm flattered. I can't do it. Well, they just kept pecking away at me. And finally, I said, okay, what time would it be? 7 a.m. So it lost the allure again immediately. They talked me into it. It was a one-hour show. I would stay up till 2 and 3 in the morning a couple nights a week to write it. It was outside of work. It became so difficult, I thought, okay, I'll do 20 shows, and then I'll bow out. And then I did 20 more. And then I got hooked and interviewed people all over the United States, actually some out of the United States. And I just became hooked on the talent and the amazing people that are out there in the food and beverage industry and what they're doing. Anybody and everything. I can't say names, but major distillers, the chemical engineer who is the head distiller in Jalisco, Mexico, from the liquor that's made out of agave, and just amazing individuals in what they're doing. So I got hooked on it from there, and that was it. It was great. We actually patterned it after a sports talk show. We always had at least three or four people around the table. And everybody thought that the interviews were there. They were actually, you know, edited and done by phone, nice and tight, and then we'd play them. It was great.
I already knew you had a radio voice, but then when I heard that, I said, I got to mention this in this episode. Don't be surprised if WGT tries to snatch you, too.
Oh, I don't know. Well, WGT does amazing things, and I learned that from when I was with the Andersons.
Thank you so much for sharing your wonderful past, present, and we want to hear, what are you got going on for the future? What's going on with the Inspiration Kitchen and you?
Growth, more established, more employment established, venues, and there's a lot of talent in the town right now. We're working on, now that we've gotten the Jacques Pepin Foundation Award, everybody's interested now, wants to do dinners, wine dinners, and chef dinners, which I did before when I was with other things. So it's going to grow in that way. I have to say this, we've been pretty humble. A lot of people don't know about the program, and it's time for it to really come out and get wings with individuals. We've been at Lott Industries a year, which has been amazing. Well, when we're there, they're there from 12:30 to 6:30, and we do what's called staff meal. Our students eat everything they prepared, and anyone that's around is welcome to come in. None of the food stays there. Everything they cook a lot of dishes. It's very intensive culinary. So I always tell them everything goes out the door except if we have maybe some sauces or some conserves or things like that. Well, we already took plenty, chef. I'll say, do you have a neighbor that's shut in? Some people here, some disabilities. So yeah, and I also do once a month, and it will get bigger, a cooking class for those with disabilities who can't work. They're part of ADS, Adult Day Services. They are my joy. They are my joy.
Well, you have been a joy to have on the show, and we look forward to doing wonderful things with you and supporting you as you run the Inspiration Kitchen and just be amazing.
I'm honored. Thank you for having me to let me share some things with you, and you're doing a fantastic job of getting the word out.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm your host and producer, Monique. My executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer. Join me next time for another exciting episode of Soul of the Glass City podcast. For more information, if you have questions or comments, go to wgte.org/soul.
WGTE. Voices around us.